Hello, and welcome to Talking SME, our quickfire chats with business leaders. I'm Jo Gregory from 10 to 2, experts in flexible recruitment and consulting. I'm very pleased today to welcome Baljit Kaur, founder of Innate Consultancy, who are specialists in diversity, equity and inclusion. She's going to talk about a hugely important topic and an area that I'm hugely interested in and passionate about, more so since being with 10 to 2 than ever before, is diversity and inclusion. So I'm absolutely thrilled today to be joined by Baljit, who's an expert in these areas and is going to be having a lovely chat with me today. Can I hand over to you, Baljit, to say hi to the audience?
Yeah, hello, everyone. Hi, Jo. As you say, Jo, I'm a diversity, equity and inclusion consultant. So I work with organisations in this space, supporting them in terms of identifying where those systemic and structural barriers might be around facilitating and embedding diversity and inclusion. And I also work with organisations in terms of facilitating some of those sort of challenging conversations we have in this space around a number of areas. In addition to that, I do work as a volunteer with Women in Banking and Finance, and I host four corporate partner national roundtables where we have further discussions around diversity inclusion.
Fascinating stuff. I imagine that you are constantly having interesting debates with clients and with individuals about this particular topic. Obviously, with 10 to 2 being part-time recruitment specialists, we have quite an interesting insight into diversity because of the specialism that we operate within. And we're finding recently that our insight into diversity is broadening, you know, the opening up of flexible working to support people with disabilities, for example, who may not be able to enter the physical workspace quite as easily, really being facilitated more with the rise of remote working and so on. So it's an area that every single individual can come at from a very different angle, but everybody has an opinion on or a level of insight too. So delighted to get into a conversation with you today. So as you know, we've got some core questions that we're going to run through, but I think both of us like to chat, so I imagine that we will go off a little bit. So really, just for our listeners today, I was hoping if you could give us a very broad understanding of what DE&I actually is. I mean, it's a phrase that's thrown around a lot now, but not everybody may understand really what those letters really stand for.
And there are a number of sort of euphemisms in this area at this moment in time, and you know, justifiably so, in the sense that our learning and our maturity around understanding diversity and inclusion is evolving. So language and acronyms, etc. will evolve accordingly. So that's understandable. But sometimes I think we do get hung up a lot on the language and the acronyms, you know, and the substance behind that is sometimes lacking. But absolutely, I do understand the need that we do need to have some terminology, you know, a set of words that are meaningful that we can actually talk around. And generally speaking, when we talk about DE&I, the current thinking is that DE&I stands for diversity, equity and inclusion. But we mustn't forget the equality aspect. You know, the very ethos and the spirit around, you know, the diversity and inclusion is around ensuring that there is equality of opportunity for everyone. So when we talk about diversity, equity and inclusion, we need to ensure that equality is part and parcel of that narrative. But diversity is essentially, you know, the range of people you have in an organization, the mix very much, you know, though this is sort of the numerical aspect, you know, how many people do you have or which background, what diversity in perspective do they bring to the organization, what experiences do they have, as well as all of those protected characteristics which come under the equality legislation. So diversity in its broadest range, but we mustn't forget, and this is something, Joe, that I'm seeing a lot of discussion around. We mustn't forget that when we're talking about diversity of thought and diversity of perspective, we mustn't forget that this goes hand in hand with the protected characteristics, because Absolutely. We are in danger of being so far removed and detaching ourselves from the protected characteristics. And we hear a lot of diversity of thought and nothing else. So the two go hand in hand. So when we talk about diversity, we need to do it in that holistic way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. equity is very much around, you know, understanding the individual needs of a person and doing your utmost best to actually meet those individual needs. And that is where we almost look at sort of how do we level the playing field. We appreciate that people are at different starting points. You know, there is a history of marginalization and oppression that some community groups come from, some demographic groups come from. So how do we ensure that we level the playing field, which is why equity is very much, you know, in the mix today, because it is all about how do we make sure we provide those ample opportunities so everybody is at the same starting point. And then we have inclusion. Inclusion is very much a feel of an organization. This is about every individual, you know, feeling valued and feeling celebrated in the workplace. You know, it's all right having diversity, but if you aren't leveraging that diversity, using all of that rich insight that diversity brings, then you're not going to have that inclusive workplace. So inclusion is very much around, you know, the feel of an organization and the innate need that people have to feel respected and valued. Very much, Joe, where my consultancy names comes from. Innate consultancy is just really, you know, understanding that this is innate in every human being. We all have that innate need to feel valued, respected, included.
That was actually quite a mind-blowing explanation of the three different points there. And thank you so very much for that. Now, coming at this from a SME point of view, most of our listeners are going to be in small to medium businesses, are going to hear that and probably feel very, very strongly that that is what they want for their business. You know, they want that that value that all of the different areas bring, you know, that wonderful mix of insight, that knowledge, that cultural value that you've talked about, that all of these elements can bring. But it does feel like quite a lot, doesn't it? It does feel like a lot for a small business to be able to achieve. Do you feel as though this is sometimes seen as a corporate thing, or do you think that it's achievable for SMEs to really flourish within DE&I?
I think this is a no choice situation, really, for all organisations, whatever your size is. So small, medium, large, you almost have to be doing something around diversity and inclusion and seem to be doing something. So visibility in this landscape is really, really important. We are in an era where we have an increasingly socially minded consumer base. People have a heightened understanding around issues, diversity and inclusion. And you alluded to this, Joe, everyone has an insight, everyone has a perspective, whatever, you know, angle they're coming at this. So everybody's got a viewpoint. So how are you seen to be incorporating those insights and best practice in your organization? And how are you staying ahead of the curve? You know, bearing in mind, you know, we take into account, you know, your scale, your size, the capacity that an organization has, and that will differ across the board. But small, medium sized organizations, depending on their size, capacity, levels, should really just be doing work in diversity and inclusion that is proportionate to all of those things, rather than not doing anything at all. So this is about understanding why this is meaningful to you and what is it you can do within the resources and the constraints that you have as an organization. But everybody needs to be doing something in this space. We know from Glassdoor that 76% of existing employees and future employees, so prospective candidates, all consider diversity and inclusion to be an organizational reputational asset, and they are looking to work for organizations that have good practice in these areas, that are taking this seriously. We know from a recent survey that Ernst & Young did, and this was a global survey, where they said that 63% of individuals that were looking to work for organizations were looking to understand what the perception around diversity and inclusion was. And when we talk about younger generations, Joe, that percentage jumps up to 73%. Mm-hmm. So younger generations are definitely clued up. So all of this is telling us that if you want to capture new markets, if you do not want to stagnate, if you want to attract talent, you want to mitigate risk, then diversity and inclusion has to be at the core of your culture.
Absolutely fascinating. I mean, those percentages are are huge, really, if you think about the trouble that SMEs are having with recruitment due to talent shortages and so on, along with embracing flexible working, got to get a little pun in there, looking at your DE&I seems to be essential. And as you rightly said, demonstrating that as well, being proud of the work that you're doing towards becoming a wholly equitable workplace is really, really key. In your work, have you found that there are obstacles that businesses come up against, that they come to you for support with? And is there a general theme amongst those obstacles? Do you find the same things being replicated again and again, or are they different obstacles depending on business or sector or size?
Some of the obstacles will be very nuanced to that organization. So it depends on, you know, the kind of service you provide, the nature of the demographics and the nature of customers that you have, all of those things. You know, what are you doing and what are you in the business of? So, some, you know, a lot of this will be nuanced to an organization, but some general sort of organizational issues, if you like, and barriers that organizations face is one, not being clear on what they want to do in this space, you know, why they're in this space and what they want to achieve. So jumping on the bandwagon just because everybody else seems to be doing something isn't really great, because that's just lifting something, landing in your organization and hoping that it will work. So it's kind of that, you know, sort of a high risk strategy. I'm not saying not all of those things will land, but you really need to think about why this is important to you and what is it that you are going to do as an organization that's going to give you the greatest return on your investment, because there is resource, there is money, there is, energy that is going to go into this. So in order for you to get that highest return on value on your investment, then we need to ensure that we are making the biggest difference. So being very clear as to why you're doing this is number one. And secondly, especially for small and medium organizations, I mean, larger organizations have kind of got the budgets and the resources to do all sorts of fancy things. But if we want to make this meaningful for small, medium-sized organizations, it really is thinking about what's important to your people. So asking your people, involving your people, and co-creating your diversity and inclusion strategy and work is really, really important, because your people will tell you what's going to make the biggest difference to them. And if you start in those two areas, you know, the why and getting your people on board, then you're off to a very good start.
That's an amazing piece of insight there, really turning it round and being quite introspective to start with, because in the kind of opposite of what we've just said about telling the world about the action that you're taking, before you can do that, you really need to look inside and go back to your core kind of business values, I guess, which again can be a whole other piece of work. But I guess as long as you're bringing in a thread of DE&I when you are investigating those values and remembering to incorporate that into each of the decisions that you're making,
absolutely,
then you're on the right track. Also, you know, reflecting it back on your current employees, I know that some of the listeners will feel nervous around those protected characteristics and not necessarily feel hugely confident in having conversations around those areas because of the legislation around those protected characteristics. Do you feel as though that is an obstacle in itself, that lack of confidence in dealing with uncomfortable conversations? And if so, is there any brief guidance that you could give?
Yeah, so it can become quite scary, because it seems like, as we started off on this conversation, it seems like there's a lot to do, you know, and there is always evolving legislation. And as we know, in flexible working, there is evolving legislation there. We're currently going through that process. So, but really the mindset and the approach organizations should have is, you know, these are all opportunities for growth, you know, cultural growth for an organization. I think the mindset is really important, because if we come at this thinking, oh, you know, this is another sort of stick approach, we're going to have to do this and we have to do this now, and it's all a compliance led approach, that doesn't really work for an organization or the people within the organization, because that becomes tick box. We're only doing this because the law has asked us to do this. So it's really turning it around to say, you know, why are we doing this? Back to that question, why do we want to do this? What are the positives for our organization? And there will be opportunities to grow. We know, you know, 70% more likely to capture into new markets if you have that diversity within an organization. So what is research telling us, and which bits of those research actually we can, you know, relate to, resonate with us in the work that we're doing? And more importantly, if we want our people to stay, because when we talk about costs, small, medium organizations can't afford for a high turnover. We want our people to, you know, be retained. We don't want to lose our talent. We want to attract the best talent. All of those things. In order to do that, we need to ensure that we have got those genuinely inclusive places where people feel that they belong. You know, it's that sense of belonging we talk about a lot in this place. So when we talk about, you know, those individual needs, if we asked our people, you know, put legislation to one side. Yes, obviously, somebody needs to keep an eye on, you know, policies and procedures and ensuring that, you know, we are compliant to legislation. But when we ask our people, you know, our people might say things, and very likely to say things, you know, like flexible working is really important to us. We know, you know, the vast majority of people now working for organizations are looking to see what those conditions of working are, you know, as opposed to the pay still is the number one, you know, indicator for attracting people. But, you know, most very close up is this whole issue around agile working, which incorporates flexible working and all those other different types of working. International Women's Day, we've just had last week. And, you know, organizations, you know, women particularly in those organizations are talking about menopause policies. You know, what kind of, you know, environments can we have to support people that are menopausal? You know, they're talking about fertility. In fact, fertility, I heard more recently, is ranking third in terms of those employee benefits at this moment in time. And, you know, people have got, you know, huge sort of sentiment attached to fertility because of a number of growing issues that people are experiencing, and almost that stigma being removed now and people being able to talk about some of these more sensitive areas in the workplace. So when we ask our people the richness, you know, around some of those cultural policies and procedures that will enhance the working environment comes from, you know, hearing those voices. So yes, legislation, we need to keep an eye, but legislation is kind of, you know, a bit like it's very corporate and it's very tick boxy. You know, to really live and breathe this, it's thinking about what's really important to our people, and let's focus our efforts in those areas.
Wonderful. I too have seen the recent commentary on menopausal leave or menopausal support. I didn't realize that the fertility had gone up to number three. That's really, really high, and it shows a massive cultural push for a change in a new area that was previously not talked about in the workplace. So it's great to see that more barriers are coming down and more openness of discussion is being allowed. In some of the trade publications that we at Tend to have had access to, there has been a little bit of a backlash recently towards some areas of DE&I. Have you seen that? Do you have any comments on some of the things you've read? I can tell by your smile that you have seen it.
Oh, I've seen it. I've heard it, Jo. I call it noise. I call it background noise, Jo. In that, if the evidence, all this evidence and all the statistics I've quoted today and all the evidence in terms of, you know, an individual's lived experience, you know, people saying these things are important to us, and more so this area is evolving all the time because people are more open about discussing, you know, areas that potentially we wouldn't have discussed, you know, a few years back. And that's the evidence to me. If the evidence is saying that this is really important and it has huge business benefits, whatever size of organization you are, then everything else to me is background noise. So when we hear, you know, billionaires with a particular perspective on life, you know, your Elon Musks and your Bill Ackmans, you know, saying, you know, this isn't important, and it's kind of, you know, taking us away from, you know, other things that are more important. You know, I just say my response to that is they have a very skewed perspective and narrative on diversity and inclusion, because the evidence, which is research based, is telling us something completely different. So, you know, that doesn't help. Our government rhetoric sometimes doesn't help. You know, it can be quite divisive. We know that there's an anti-woke sentiment that's growing in the country. And we know people, you know, many people will say, what's in it for me? You know, this is all about women. This is all about, you know, other minority marginalized groups, you know, what about me? And we forget that when we talk about diversity, equity and inclusion, where we started this chat from, that is inclusive of everybody. You know, white men who do have this sentiment about, you know, I'm going to be left behind, you know, I'm no longer important, I don't have those opportunities, that narrative includes everybody. You know, it includes everybody. So if we are, you know, concentrating on groups that haven't had the opportunities, it's only going to lift everybody up. This isn't going to leave people behind. We're just leveling the playing field, but everybody will benefit. The organization as a whole will benefit. So the background noise, I don't really, you know, think about. I just think it's an excuse. And really, we need to think about, we are in a very globalized working environment. Our range of customers are more global than ever. We know that we have this increasingly socially minded consumer base who are looking to see how well an organization is doing in this space. The two combined together give us the evidence that we need.
Absolutely. I think that you've hit the nail on the head there with the very narrow and quite skewed view of what's going on in the wider world. And it's interesting that you talk a lot about the consumer base and really needing to think about the diversity within that consumer base and making sure that that's reflected within your own organization. And I couldn't agree with you more. I think that so many businesses could really benefit from thinking about who their end user is and what they would like to see reflected within the organization, whether they're a future employee or not. Just that level of transparency that we have available to us now means there is really nowhere to hide. And, you know, Glassdoor, where you provided one of your statistics from earlier, is a great example of a service that wasn't available years ago when DE&I wasn't so prevalent and maybe wasn't seen as important. Thank you so much for all of that. It's really amazing insight. And I can see that you've really gleaned insight, not just through your own clients, but from a wider perspective as well. We were hoping to be able to leave our listeners with some really short, sharp hints and tips moving forward. Would you be happy to give us sort of three very, very simple things that business owners who might be listening today could take away with them in their pocket and implement within their business without necessarily needing to call on your services?
Yeah, sure. And that's the thing, you know, a lot of this stuff can be done internally, especially for smaller organizations. But the only thing I would say is don't confuse passion with skill set. Yeah. So if you've got passionate people, absolutely nurture and develop them so they acquire that skill set. So don't think passion alone is going to actually drive this area forward. So that probably is my first takeaway. Let me convert that into a takeaway, Joe. In that, you know, if you're going to do some work in this area, ensure you have the not only the capacity, but the expertise. So expertise in terms of evidence-based best practice insights being brought into the organization, and then having the skill set to be actually roll out some of this. You can do that internally. So if you identify people that are passionate, do invest in them, grow and nurture them so they have the skill set to be able to progress this. I think I'm going to go back to that point that the second takeaway would be around that why. You know, be very clear on your why. Don't take this for granted and think, oh yeah, everybody else is doing this, so let's do this. Because at the end of the day, your customers, your prospective candidates, and more importantly, your existing staff will see through that. You know, if they say, well, why are you doing this? Or some of your practices do not marry up with your rhetoric, you know, you will easily be caught out. So that piece of exercise is really valuable to do. Why is this important to us? Because if you're feeling, you know, you're not really behind this, it's not really important, or you don't want to invest the time, then at that leadership sort of board level, you actually need to say that outright, because there's no point doing something that is, you know, against, you know, your sort of, you know, what you feel is not in your interest, because you will actually turn off and disengage your existing members of staff as well as your candidates. So being clear on the why and also the what, and that goes back to the point we made, Joe, around, you know, do things in line with your capacity and the resources available. If that means you can only do two things in a year, then albeit that is all you can do, two things a year, but do them well. So two things a year is absolutely fine for small, medium sized organizations. And then the third thing I would say is rather than sort of picking things up and saying, okay, let's look at our job descriptions and think about the language, which more organizations are getting familiar with. We have masculine coded language, feminine coded language. So that might be an area for improvement. Absolutely, you can do that. I'm not saying not to do that, but ideally do a bit of an audit first. Do that end-to-end review process around your culture. Do the end-to-end review process around your recruitment. And then think about where might those inclusivity barriers be? Where might those biases be manifested that we need to unearth, rather than just having that initiative focus? We've got an initiative over here, we've got an initiative over here, but really we haven't done that sort of root cause analysis. So every time we'd have to go back retrospectively and undo things potentially. So it doesn't yield optimal results when we take that kind of approach. It might look good. We're doing this, we're busy in this space, but really we need to do a bit of an audit in the organization so that you're doing that end-to-end review process and doing things in that sort of proper due regard way, as opposed to an initiative focus. There's three.
Wonderful. I think that that gives our listeners plenty of food for thought. I think that hopefully they've taken a lot away from what you've said. And hopefully they can take those three things away, and even if not implement them straight away, maybe start threading them into their next few years of planning and next few years of growth. Wonderful stuff. Thank you so very much. As all the listeners know, here at 10 to 2, we feel very, very passionately about diversity and inclusion. One of the whole reasons that we were started was to increase the amount of women able to participate in the workplace. That is our very narrow viewpoint. But as I said at the beginning, we're finding that flexibility opens doors for more and more people from more and more different backgrounds, and really does help businesses to improve their DE&I massively across the board. So thank you again so much for your time, Baljit. This has been such a valuable and important chat, which I'm sure our listeners will have learned much from. It's been a pleasure. To our listeners, I hope that you've enjoyed talking to me. Look out for further episodes coming from 10 to 2, experts in flexible recruitment and consulting.